Hey everyone, quick programming note. We're going to start the show with James and I talking Friday basketball. And then around the 45-minute mark, I'll have Chris Durrell on to talk about the NASCAR race coming up this weekend and how you can set some NASCAR lineups for DraftKings. So we'll talk basketball first and NASCAR second. Let's get it on. All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NBA podcast for Friday, March 17th, St. Patrick's Day. I know you're already starting to celebrate, buddy. I'm Doug Norrie, that is.
James Davis.
And we are from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short, here to help you get started, keep winning, FanDuel and or DraftKings. You still have time to grab optimal lineups for both of those sites, powered by Lineup Lab. It's free for 3 days and just $29.95 a month after that. That includes our hockey projections as well. Baseball, just a few weeks away. We're in prep mode. What's the word for it? Prep, that sounds like when you're like preparing for something bad. We are in like all hands on deck mode, getting baseball ready. So free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. I think that's about the best deal you'll find in the industry, and you're good to go. Eight games in the NBA today, highlighted by some, I would call, pretty significant injury news going in. And that's kind of been the theme over the last. Do you remember a time? And this is like a classic Bill Simmons thing, where he's like, "This thing has never happened before, right? This is the first time." Do you remember a time where such and such happens? Like that's classic, just I don't know, hot take, kind of just bad analysis kind of thing. But there's been a lot of just very key injuries at this time in the season in the short term. Do you think that this is just sort of the way the NBA is going? Do you think this is just like a weird string? I mean, like Durant, Aldridge, now we have Isaiah Thomas, Dwayne Wade's out for the season, Lowry's been out. You know, the list is pretty long.
Eric Bledsoe, yeah.
Bledsoe's sitting as they continue to tank. So do you remember a time where we've had to make like this many pivots late in the season, or do you think I'm just like misremembering and this is just kind of par for the course for the NBA?
No, it does feel more than usual. You know, we've only been doing this in earnest for 4 years, so I don't know that we can speak to like, oh, that 01 season when Weber and whoever, David Robinson went out, right? But I will say that since the DFS era, I think it has to be one of the more uncertain times. I mean, you mentioned just the guys from the last week, but there's superstars all over the league. Lowry still being out as well. So there's like, yeah, just team after team after team. And to say nothing of the huge trades, right? So some guys went out for the season, but then New Orleans just took Sacramento's best player and gave them nothing in exchange, basically, right? So
right.
There's just uncertainty up and down the league. We're still trying to figure out the ramifications of like Jabari Parker being out of Milwaukee. Anyway, the list goes on, and it's very uncertain. But I also feel like, I'd love your take on this. Do you feel like this increases the variance of DFS, or do you think it just increases the difficulty and thereby increase the overall edge a skilled player can have?
Well, the big difference between now and like 4 years ago, let's say, is that Tyler Ulysses of the world would not have been 5,400 right now, right? Like he would have still been 3,500 on FanDuel,
yeah.
Or like 4,000. So I think like the fact that that has happened, see, I'm not sure if it's an variance decrease or increase, right? The variance increases because everyone's going to play Ulysses tonight, right? Like because the chalk becomes super chalk. Like even look at last night. Last night is a decent sized Thursday slate. Hernan Gomez is an 80% start on FanDuel. Melo is an 88% or something like that, somewhere in that range, percent start on FanDuel. And now, again, you're playing 7-on-7 against everybody else, you know? And so that is, yeah, that's where the variance comes in, because now if you miss one guy or two guys, which is going to happen in basketball, right? You're just going to have Gordon Hayward go out and score 25 points sometimes.
Sure.
When that happens and you're playing 7-on-7, then you're going to see, it just is going to make FanDuel specifically very, very difficult, because the in this case the margins are really, really shaved down. So I think that's what I mean. Do you see like that as the variance like increase? Do you agree with like that assessment?
I think I do. I mean, I think there's a case to be made that it increases the overall edge and increases the variance, and that can make it can be tough to realize a greater edge over the course of greater variance. Like, you know, the old classic example of flipping a coin, and if you pay me $2 for every flip and I pay you $1 for every flip that goes your way, you can still beat me over the course of 7 flips. So, you know, edge does not really, you know, they're not mutually exclusive of one another. You can oftentimes, in fact, get a bigger edge the more variance you're willing to take on, because many people are unwilling to do so, and so they'll leave that edge on the table for you. And I think that's kind of where we're at now. I mean, there's these risky plays too from night to night that are kind of weird. Like Juancho Hernan Gomez was the case here last night, where all indicators had him playing a lot of minutes. it wasn't quite that crystal clear before tip-off time. Some people took the risk and some people didn't, right? And so, you know, on the flip side, we went the other way with Ivica Zubac the previous night, right? Where it's right. like, we think he's going to play a lot of minutes. So, yeah, it's... And we've also made some mistakes too, like,
yep.
And people are going to make them as well. So, but I think if people are focusing and if they are able to or willing to try and find that edge, figure out actually which of these plays is good, which of them are going to get minutes. You know, we've been working really hard on trying to suss out this just new normal in a world where it's not like we're not talking about two guys under 5,000 each night that might see more minutes. It's like eight guys and which are best. So yeah, I think it increases variance. Also just because punts in general increase your variance, but I think there's a lot of edge to be had still.
Yeah, and I do think that just in general, like I think you're going to see tonight just an incredible amount of overlap in lineups just because the because with a lot of the, what we're going to talk about today, with the guys that are injured, there are almost clear one-to-one, this guy's out, this guy gets a majority of the uptick, whether it be minutes or whether it be usage or both, you know? So I think because... I think it's just so clear on some of these guys, and we'll get to that. But I do think tonight on FanDuel especially, you're going to see some pretty heavy chalk, maybe in like six of the positions. We'll get to who I think those guys are going to be. The first game is on 7 o'clock, Dallas and Philadelphia. Wes Matthews is questionable. He did not play last game. Unclear if he's going to play tonight. Philadelphia has been sort of in this situation where they've been at times happy to run guys like Covington and Saric out for big minutes. Those are really the only two they can really trust. Anything for you on this side of the ball? I suspect we're looking a little bit more for Dallas.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a decent amount of value on the Dallas side. Harrison Barnes, they just refused to change his price. He's like frozen in stasis in their algorithm somewhere, like coming in at 6,100. Bounced back from an off game against Toronto with 32 fantasy points against the Wizards. And, you know, these days that's certainly enough to get you by for cash game purposes. I think we're seeing at this point that he doesn't really have the upside that you want for big tournaments. But yeah, it seems like a relatively strong play. Curry, you know, we had him slotted for more minutes with Wes Matthews missing last game. You know, he only played 33 minutes. Wasn't that terrific, but he's still very cheap. I mean, I do think he, like, probably his targeted minutes for them is around 36 minutes. And if he plays those, it seems like paying this price against a pretty poor Philly perimeter defense would be somewhat trivial. But after that, it kind of falls off pretty dramatically for me. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, I could see possibly playing Dirk if you thought he was going to play 30 minutes. He's a pretty fair price on FanDuel at a position that's not the easiest to fill at power forward. So I don't mind Dirk, though. You're not really getting a ton of minutes upside on him, really, in the best case scenario. So.
Yeah, and that's a problem I run into with Dirk. Like, I think this is actually spot on because, so say you have Harrison Barnes, right? If Harrison Barnes loses 6 minutes, he's still going to play 31 or 32 minutes. With Dirk, we've seen that, you know, he can go down to 23 minutes, 24 minutes without any problem, really. And then at that point, it becomes a very dicey proposition for him to pay off on a $6,300 salary. So while, yes, I think his true expectation probably is close to 5x points per dollar here, there's so many scenarios where he just scores me 21 or 24 fantasy points that it just feels like a why bother situation.
Yeah, the more the issue with Dirk, and the reason he is even on the radar, is that power forward is so bad tonight.
Yeah.
Like when you have to, and this has been sort of a theme, hasn't been so bad in the short term, I feel like, but a sort of a theme for this year has been how difficult it can be, and especially on FanDuel, to roster just one power forward, forget two, you know. So,
sure.
And there's just a lot of just question marks. So yeah, that's where Dirk just kind of crops up. Like if you look at our list right now for an 8-game slate, only on FanDuel we only have one power forward listed at over like 5 points per dollar, which is like right around where you would want to be, you know, good. Like that's where you're starting to get into what we would call like quote good value. Right. And there's literally one power forward that is there, and it's John Lohr, and you don't even feel great about that one. We'll get to him later.
No.
But so it's not even, so that list, the list gets pretty grisly pretty quick.
More from the Philly game. Okay. Just a quick question for you, because people are gonna be asking about him. Jahlil Okafor, you know, 5,400. The minutes haven't been there, but the production has been. Last five games, easily topping 5x points per dollar. You know, going up to 38 points against Golden State in just 23 minutes. What do you make of him?
It's just the minutes. It's too much can go wrong. Dallas is a
big tournament play, reasonable option there.
Maybe, yeah. Dallas is a really bad matchup just for anybody, just because they're so slow and pretty defensively sound. Just if his peak is 28 minutes, he's not Joel Embiid. A lot needs to go right. I know 5,400 is a fair price for him, but I would just get worried that the production you're seeing on these minutes is the peak that you can expect, I think. Like, I don't think there's no way, there's almost no way he can go higher than this.
I'm with you,
and
for
And I also just don't think he's a candidate to just all of a sudden start playing 30 minutes a game as Philly continues to try to lose. The 7 o'clock, the other 7 o'clock game is the Bulls and the Wizards. So, okay, the first side of this is Dwayne Wade is out for the season. That means I think you see Jimmy Butler as probably the chalk play here tonight. The Bulls are still in the playoff hunt, sort of unbelievably. I can't believe it. They're right now, they're only one game out in the loss column in the East. So they are, and they have, at this point, they just have to probably try to keep winning. Like, their fate is tied to just hopefully making the playoffs and have it not be a totally lost season. Yeah. So I think 39 to 40 minutes out of Butler tonight is, like, fair. Maybe just, like, maybe that's his average. What do you think? Do you think Butler just ends up becoming maybe, like, the most popular higher money guy in the slate?
I think so. I mean, people have been playing him anyway, and it's been a mixed bag for him recently. Like, he's got some a stretch of really tough time on this price, but people, you know, they like the name. I think they're going to like the narrative of no Wade, and I think it's pretty justified. I mean, our system, you know, we regress these things pretty dramatically. We're anticipating about an 8% usage increase for Butler, just in terms of basket score, to say nothing of just what the other kind of incidental benefits of having the ball in his hands more, like more assists, for instance. So yeah, I do think Butler will be chalk. I do think it's a solid play. Washington's kind of one of these teams where it kind of depends who actually winds up covering him in terms of how this matchup shakes out. You know, the difference between Beal and Porter, I think, bigger than it might seem. I think Beal is better at covering perimeter players than Porter is. But one way or the other, I think Jimmy Buckets gets his tonight, and I'm not worried about it at all.
Yeah, I only have met 37 minutes, and I think that's low. And when you said we regress these numbers, 8% usage bump in our system is like almost as high as you'll ever see for a player.
Right.
You know, like rare times we get up to 10%, and that's usually actually just when like there's been some crazy like sample size issue. But
yeah, so 8%, well, and I think that's to speak to why we do that. You know, I think a lot of people perhaps overcorrect a little bit more, and the issue here is sample size, right? Like, sure, Butler has been out on the court without Wade a good amount this season, but he hasn't been out there for like a ton of whole games without Wade. And it's really tough to maintain. Like, let's say you're just playing a regular game, right? And like, say the Durant and Westbrook thing when they were on the same team. Well, one of them goes out, the other carries the offensive load for like 3 minutes while that player is gone, right? It's very logical, very intuitive for Westbrook, say, to just start jacking up shots for 3 minutes, knowing that Durant will be back out there. But nobody in the league is just going to have like a 45% usage just because one other player on their team goes down. So you have to be careful about extrapolating those numbers across a whole game basis.
No, I agree. And that's why we do it. And that's why we just don't want to go overboard with that. On the watch. Oh, and the other piece of this, I do think, is that you see Rondo is a pretty popular play. Rondo has stepped into that starting point guard role. He's played 35 and 34 minutes over the last two. He's been great. It stands to reason that he just sees even more minutes here without Wade. If like this is the way they've decided to just play the rest of the season. You know, they've been in this weird mode of, we have all these point guards, they all suck, we don't know which one to play. If they just have chosen for it to be Rondo, which it appears they have, I do think you see Rondo as a fairly popular play as well tonight, and I think it's correct. So I think playing Rondo and Butler together in cash, especially on FanDuel, is Rondo will be less owned than Butler, but he'll still be a pretty high play.
Oh, I think he'll be hugely owned. I mean, he was owned in that Memphis game. There, people are going to play him tonight.
On the Washington side, we're waiting for news on John Wall. He's questionable with, I believe, a foot injury. But if he were to play, I'm not really loving anything on the Washington side of the ball. If he were to sit, though, what do you think that does to the Wiz as a team? I mean, we might see a Brandon Jennings start. You probably see more usage out of Beal. Like, where do you think that falls if Wall does sit?
Yeah, Wall's a really interesting guy to have sit because, first of all, he's played just so many minutes this season. Yeah. And second of all, I haven't looked at this in a couple days, but the last time I looked, he was pretty comfortably third in the league in terms of time of possession, you know, just having the ball in his hands in a particular game. And opening up that amount of time, it was like 7.5 minutes or something, opening up that amount of time just kind of wreaked havoc on a team's plan because just their fantasy production also. There's the obvious kind of trickle-down effect of, you know, backups and so on getting additional run, but there's also this thing where, you know, people who are used to getting the ball from Wall, like, picture the relationship between Channing Frye and LeBron. Like, if there are certain spots where Wall finds Beal, for instance, that whoever fills in for him can't find, that's going to cause some real trickle down effect. So I'm very curious to see. Yeah, as of this, Wall number one in the league now in terms of time of possession per game, which is completely insane. More than Harden, more than Westbrook. So yeah, this is going to have a huge impact on their team.
Yeah, and I think what it would do is you probably see Beal get a majority of that like usage come out of a situation like that. Jennings would make a really interesting play. We have not much of a sample size on like what his role would look like for the Wizards in that thing. But yeah, like replacing a guy like Wall, like this is what happens. Wall, LeBron, these guys that like just have the ball so much. Like you mentioned, Harden and Westbrook. Like you're just a totally different team when
yeah. Well, I think a lot of people don't put Wall in that category necessarily. You know, I think they just don't realize that he's at 8.9 minutes per game. That's like more like a quarter of the time he's on the court, he's physically bouncing the ball up and down. Not a quarter of the time on offense. Like he's just there holding the ball, and yeah, it opens up just huge lanes. I mean, if he's out, I think we should strongly consider basically everyone in the Washington lineup, minus the people that are directly dependent on him, like say big men or something. But yeah, all those perimeter guys become great plays in my mind.
The 7:30 game, the first 7:30 game is Detroit and Toronto. This is one of those situations where it becomes tough to trust the guys like Reggie Jackson in the world. Just when you think that he's seeing those minutes bounce back up, he comes out, was real bad against Cleveland. Then they start last game, they started John Lohr. What can we even make of the Pistons at this point? Can we trust really any part about them? Like a system likes Lohr at 4,000 at 30 minutes, mostly just because he's just 4,000 and playing 30 minutes. Like he's not a particularly good player at this point, but he's cheap. And Jackson, same thing. His price has fallen off a cliff as well. What do you make of the Pistons team right now?
Yeah, Lohr feels kind of like a trap to me. You know, he played 30 minutes against Utah, but like if you look at his game log and like Ivica Zubac, not a perfect comp, but like this trend of like, oh, now he's the starter. Oop, he played a lot of minutes in a game with kind of a weird game script. Like, I just don't trust him to play. I certainly don't trust him to play more than that. They have a lot of cooks in that front court kitchen right now, a lot of guys they could justify giving minutes to. And what they do from night to night, it doesn't always even really seem like a lot of teams do this weird thing where just because a guy is nominally named the starter, then he just has to play whatever the quote-unquote starter's minutes are. The Pistons right. Don't seem to be a team like that to me, so I don't trust that one bit. And really, there's no one on this team I would be able to feel super excited to play tonight.
Not in the same way. I can't trust Jackson. I begrudgingly wrote up Lohr last night and apologized like three times in the write-up for doing it. Like I just didn't want to, but power forward, it just really spoke to how bad power forward was. Toronto, they've dealt with blowouts in their last three games. DeRozan has not been very good. They're just sort of struggling here. They're showing that really kind of how important Lowry was to this team.
Yeah.
And losing your starting point guard, who's among the very best two-way point guards in all of basketball, has really taken a hit. And where I think we thought we would see increased usage on DeRozan's part, it hasn't really totally come to fruition. Do you think it's because when you lose a guy like Lowry, it seems like a guy like DeRozan would be the clear one-to-one benefit, and he is. Over the course of the season, his usage does climb. But now, this is sort of like what you mentioned before with Wall. Now it's full games worth of him, like him being out there, and teams being able to scheme for a full game again without Lowry being there. Do you think that's had a direct impact on DeRozan?
I think absolutely. I mean, it's one thing, and it's also just one thing to try to sustain that level of usage over the course of like four games or three games. But there's a good reason why nobody in the NBA really averages 30 shots a game or 25 right. shots a game, because it's just exhausting. It's hard to put a ball in the air against an NBA quality defender and not get it batted back in your face. And when you pair that with having to guard the other team's best perimeter player, they're asking a ton of DeRozan right now. And yeah, these last few games have just been very, very strange. You can't really take them as anything too meaningful. I mean, if you just look at the shots alone, like he shot 14 times in 29 minutes, 17 in 33, 16 in 29. This is about on par with what he had been doing. It's just that the minutes weren't there. But you can be rightfully concerned, I think, about how scalable that early production was. And the thing is, his price really hasn't gone anywhere. You know, he brushed up against 10,000 for like a minute or two. But basically, since Lowry went down, he went from 8,000 up to 9,300. And I think we're seeing that we just haven't justified basically, you know, what amounts to a 15, 16% price increase.
No, I'm totally with you there. It becomes a scary proposition. I do think there's something has definitely fundamentally sort of changed by the team. Like I said, they are struggling too. They played in some blowouts. So he's the per minute shots are kind of still around hovering around that realm, but he just hasn't seen anywhere close to that 36 to 37 minutes we'd expected. And because the games have gotten out of hand one way or the other. So, I mean, if you think that like, you know, they just keep in a close game here and he's back up to 37, 38 minutes because they need him to play and score, then I do think you can probably take a chance on his price, a little bit better value on DraftKings. But DeRozan's just an interesting character. I'm not really totally sure what to make of that situation. One of the bigger situations that we're going to monitor, we just know, Isaiah Thomas is out tonight for the Celtics that they're going to sit him for the next two games. Now, it seems more precautionary than it does he's actually really hurt. They just happen to play in Brooklyn tonight, and I believe they play like Philly next game. Like, they have two really easy games in a row that I suspect they're just trying to get out with the win and be able to sort of nurse him back to health. When in the past we do have a little bit of a stretch earlier in the season where Thomas missed four games and we saw huge minutes out of Marcus Smart. Do you think Marcus Smart continues to? Do you think he gets all the minutes, like, you know, 35 to 36 minutes, fair for him if he's considered the starter? And do you think he becomes a chalk play tonight?
I really do. I mean, he's not cheap anymore. 6,300. It's not like you're getting a guy at 4,000 like you've been able to get Marcus Smart for in the past, but I still think it's probably worth it. I mean, he's been flirting with, you know, being reasonable on this price with Thomas around. And the fact that Thomas goes out, Thomas, another guy, he's not quite on the same level as your Wall, you know, LeBron, like all that class, but he's right there around like 10th in the league, 11th in the league in terms of overall time of possession per game. Boston plays a fast paced game. And really what happens here, like, I don't know that I would be as bullish on Smart or Bradley here if it were just kind of a league average matchup, but yeah. The fact that it's against Brooklyn, the very best matchup in the league for opposing wing players, has me pretty excited about both of those guys tonight.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that especially you get pretty lucky when you are able to start play Smart at shooting guard on FanDuel. And I believe you can play him shooting guard on DraftKings as well. That's such that positional flexibility is really helpful, because if he's just going to be the point guard, but playing the two, which is sometimes a more difficult position to fill than just in terms of value, I think that's where you see Smart. He's very cheap on DraftKings, only 4,900. I think you see him as almost total chalk over there. One other guy that's interesting, I'd like to get your thoughts here. So in the past, in the previous games where Thomas has missed, Terry Rozier has actually played a lot of minutes off the bench, like somewhere in like that 20, let's say 24 to 25 minutes. He's their backup, sort of like backup point guard slash they can move Smart off the ball too with him on the court. He's only 3,000 on DraftKings. If you thought, and it's against Brooklyn, and there's also like this equal, like sort of like you can hedge against the blowout here because Rozier is likely to be the guy that plays more minutes if the game gets out of hand, which it could. It's a -8. Do you see him as like safe at 3,000 on DraftKings? That's the absolute minimum. And I think we have him at 22 minutes. I think that's the floor for what he plays.
Yeah, he looks plenty safe to me. You know, I don't know that it'd be kind of tough to call 22 minutes the floor for me because he's played fewer minutes than that, even with Thomas out in the past. But 3,000 is just a non-competitive price for him. And they're getting pretty shallow in terms of guys who can reliably bring the ball up the court. I think to your point about, you know, them being willing to be a little more flexible in this game, given how likely they are to win it, that makes Rozier a more likely play to me tonight too, because, hey, if they're resting Thomas, like, do they really need to push it with Smart and Bradley? So, yeah, I think it's pretty reasonable. I don't know. I would have to see how the lineups played out. Like, if there was some tremendous payoff, I would feel a lot better about it than if it was just kind of like marginal improvements across the edges, just because it feels like you're giving up some reliability there without really that much upside. But yeah, it seems totally reasonable.
In the four games that Thomas missed early in the season, it hit a four-game stretch in a row. Rozier played 24, 28, 24, and 26. So that's where I think that the 22 is low, just because we have a very clear long game stretch of just exactly what they'll do. So I actually think that,
yeah, fair.
I kind of love the play 3,000. This is exactly what you're looking for in DraftKings oftentimes.
Why didn't you marry it then? Just out of curiosity. If you love the play.
I might marry the idea, you mean? Yeah. Maybe I will. Exactly. Well, first of all, I'm free to do whatever I want, so you can't really tell me which
you should marry how to then.
Make, yeah. How to make my choices in my life. Brooklyn side, Jeremy Lin continues to be a permanent. The other Boston guys. We mentioned Smart and Rozier. How do you view guys like Crowder, Horford, Bradley, the rest of the starters? With, you know, again, a lot of shots are off the table when Thomas is not playing. And this is again, and this also is the very best matchup you can have in DFS. Maybe the Lakers are close. Do you think you'd want to even play more than just Smart, let's say? Like, do you think you want to play a Crowder or even a Bradley if you thought the minutes trend up a little bit?
Yeah, I'd be happy to play Horford. You know, just recently he's been quite excellent. You know, after taking a couple games off, back-to-back games against Minnesota and Chicago where he scored, 5x and almost 8x, 7.5x on his price. So yeah, he seems like a good play. Crowder seems fine. You know, it's just going to come down to how all the prices shake out. You know, frequently we'll get one of these great matchups and you kind of think you're just going to get four guys from the team, but the way it works out is you just wind up with the best values and then you fill in the edges elsewhere. Crowder, I'm a little less excited about just because he still needs people to make shots for him. Like, Thomas being out doesn't mean that Crowder is going to run some sets for them. So I don't really picture his and whoever replaces Thomas, I think, is way more likely to, you know, consume more of that share of shots or whatever than Crowder would be. So he's probably the least exciting guy for me out of that group. Also just based on recent production. So yeah, I'd probably opt out on him, but I do like Horford quite a bit, and I do like the backcourt guys.
Yeah, and I just wish I knew that Bradley still isn't playing tons and tons of minutes, so there could be just like a sort of implied cap on him. And there's a little bit of blowout risk here. I mean, it says a lot about the Nets. Thomas is out there. He's their best player, and the Nets are still 8-point underdogs. So the Nets are just – they are what they are. Jeremy Lin.
No way. They start smelling blood in the water when they're only 8-point dogs. We could win this one, guys.
Well, what do you think about – so Jeremy Lin continues to not really play any minutes, but the minutes he play, but the minutes he plays, he's like – really, really good. I don't really know. Like, so last night he actually climbed up to 30 minutes.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like the minutes are trending in the right direction for him. I don't think it's not like a Jahlil Okafor where he's just going to play 24 minutes till the season ends. I think they could actually, they're getting a little that Linsanity feeling there. I think they could play him more minutes for sure.
Now that you said that, they're going to like sit him for rest on the back-to-back tonight or something like that. No, if you think that 30 minutes is where he's going to operate, then this is actually a really good matchup for him as well. Actually, in some ways, Boston gets slightly better on defense against point guards with Thomas out of the picture because Thomas is a very bad defender. And so the upgrade, you get a pretty strong defensive upgrade on the Boston side going from Thomas to Smart. Obviously you get a downgrade on the offensive side. But so that would, not to say that it's like so dramatic that you would change things, you know, at some huge level, but worth it to note that Thomas is about as bad a defender as you'll get in the entire NBA. So keep that in mind if you thought about rostering Lin. But yeah, 30 minutes on him, and I don't mind it. The rest of the Nets are whatever. Buddy, before we get to this next game, tell us a little bit about Fantasy Factor.
Yeah, Fantasy Factor is a DFS site that partners with us to spread the news about their DFS contest. So that's the first thing you should know about them. The second thing you should know about them is that they offer free rolls every Friday during the NBA and NHL season, where you can go and check them out. It's between $50 and $100 usually. You just go sign up for an account, use promo code DFSR. You'll get access to all of their free rolls. They're just giving money away. You win, you put the money right back into play with their contest, or you can cash it right out. The cool thing about Fantasy Factor is you're just not going to be up against streams and streams of pros putting in 100 lineups and really, you know, upping the cash line across all these different contests. By and large, it's pretty casual players. So if you don't like the grind of playing all these huge multi-entry contests on FanDuel and DraftKings, Fantasy Factor is a great place to go, you know, play a buy-in or two, you know, have a good sweat without having to worry about getting beaten by people with huge, you know, algorithms and multi-entry editing software and whatever else they've got these days. So fantasyfactor.com, promo code DFSR. Hope to see you over there.
Minnesota takes on, I just lost it real quick here. Minnesota takes on Miami tonight. You know, I wasn't thinking too much about this game, but one note here, Bijelica, he's out for the season, which is not really, I wouldn't say this is necessarily always would be big news. The thing is, Minnesota played such short rotations to start. Then he was like one of the few guys that even saw minutes off the bench. Do you think a Tibbs coach team without him just gives even more minutes to the starters? Because like he hasn't wanted to play anybody. Like he's just like, if you sit like player 9 on the bench, like you might as well show up in street clothes. Like you're not going to play
at all. Yeah, bring your flip flops to the game.
Exactly. Like, or just and kind of just like roll the dice and see what happens, you know? Like, and maybe you run out, like, you know, like that Always Sunny at Philadelphia episode where the kid does play in flip flops. Maybe you just have to do it. But how do you see this? If you had to make a guess about how that affects the rest of the team, do you think his minutes translate more to the starters, or do you think they just kind of find some loser off the bench to just to kind of grab them?
Yeah, no, I think it's more in the realm of some loser off the bench than it goes to the starters. And the only reason I feel that is because the starters just played so many minutes anyway. Like, I guess he could go back into doing the old 40 minutes a guy thing that he did for the Bulls. The guy whose role I think it secures a little bit more readily is Georgie Deng. Yep. Deng, we saw, especially in the Golden State and Milwaukee games, he dipped down to 24 minutes after playing pretty reliable minutes leading up to that. And so I'd say that there is a pretty direct correlation between Bijelica and Deng. So, yeah, if you're a Deng buyer for whatever reason, I think I could be into that. Otherwise, nah, I'm not going to be interested in speculating too much. Bijelica is interesting. I think the reason he winds up getting so many minutes, we've seen him take minutes when they've been missing shooting guards up to centers, right? So it's he's kind of a guy that is kind of a chameleon in that way. So I don't know that you would be able to predict. Even if you knew it was going to be redistributed among the starters, you wouldn't know where exactly. So yeah, high on Deng. Don't really think it matters for the other guys.
Shabazz Muhammad did play 31 minutes last game in the game that Bijelica went down. So that could be a guy that you just see trend up to make more of that 25. And then
maybe an interesting GPP play, nothing more though.
You're sort of left in the middle. Miami side, this is just one of these teams. They're they've been good this year, and I'm, you know, it's nice to see that they've been able to string together some wins with basically just sort of a practice squad at times. But from a DFS standpoint, is there really anything for you against a Minnesota team that, yeah, they're not really all that good on defense. They don't play all that fast. Miami strikes me as the kind of team that you play someone when someone's out, but when they're all kind of exactly. when they're all kind of around, no one really jumps out to me as value. But maybe you have a different thought there.
Nah, I'm not too excited here. I mean, Hassan Whiteside makes his way into lineups from time to time for us, but yeah, usually it's in a tremendous matchup. And while Minnesota's not a bad matchup necessarily, it's also just not a good one. So I'm pretty underwhelmed here. I will say on the Minnesota side of the ball, there's going to be another guy who gets some run, probably not on our system, but from other people. And that's Ricky Rubio. I mean, what do you make of his recent, just pretty damn hot streak? Like since the Spurs game on the 4th, he's gone 42, 42, 3, 41, 33, 57, 38 fantasy points on just a $7,600 salary.
Yeah, we've had a lot of talks about Rubio. I'm don't always know what to make of it. He's clearly taken his scoring has increased pretty dramatically, especially in the short term. Like he's just has never really been a big scorer. And you know, for instance, he's averaging somewhere like around 10 or 11 points a game, and he scored over 20 in the last three. That's really not. I don't see that as like a totally sustainable part of his profile. It could have just been good matchups. Like he had two pretty good matchups in Boston and Milwaukee. Washington's not that bad of a matchup. But I mean, if he's just going to like continue to shoot more, yes, I don't totally trust it. I do think he's probably a little too expensive. All things considered now, I don't know. And I think actually one reason I'm not so worried about running into like a Rubio anti or, you know, fade the chalk in Rubio tonight is because you just have guys like Ulis and Rondo around that are just going to, people are going to play those guys instead. So, yeah, maybe you want to go the other way and play Rubio for a little upside and fade those more popular plays. Sure. But we've been low as compared to the industry on Rubio probably in the short term. And it's for sure cost us a little bit.
No, it hasn't.
I'm willing to admit it. We've just haven't been as high as some other folks. And he's just continued to be very, very good. And I still think the price is too high, but I thought that for the last two games, and I've been 100% wrong. The other 8 o'clock game is the one that is probably going to garner not the very most attention in the industry, but this is a big one. It's the Rockets take on the Pelicans. The game opens up at the 229 over-under, which is by far the highest on the slate, 9 points over the next closest game, and projected to stay close. Were you surprised when you saw this was only Houston -4.5?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, sure, the Pelicans got Boogie, but like, they haven't really been that much better with him. So I don't really know why this line is the way it is. Like, I wonder if there's some lingering injury news that insiders know about that we don't for some reason. Because, yeah, I can't make heads or tails of it. Because it's not like New Orleans is a particularly hard place to play or anything either. So I don't know how many points you would give them. Like, if this game was in Houston, doesn't it feel like it'd be a 14-point game? So, I mean, maybe I'm just used to big spreads this season, and this actually more closely reflects reality. But if I were betting this game, I would not want to bet the Pelican side.
Well, this strikes me just as Vegas doesn't know what to make of the Pelicans, right? Like, so they've lost three of their last five. Lost to Utah, who's a very good team. They lost Toronto, who's a sort of okay team without Lowry. They beat Charlotte, who stinks. They crushed Portland. And then they lost to Miami. Like, I just don't know. I don't think anyone really knows. I think this strikes me as we're waiting for this Cousins and Davis pair to sort of put it together and hang in a game. And they just really, against a good team, and that just really hasn't been the case. So it really strikes me as uncertain rather than there's some other just, you know, factor that's sitting out there. So let's start here. Do you think Harden is chalk, at least to start on FanDuel?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I think that really is the big storyline here, is that New Orleans is just such a great matchup for opposing wing players. Harden's expensive, but also very, very reliable, and just kind of feels like with all the other uncertainty kind of dipping around the league, like Wall's not even playing, Towns and Whiteside face each other, not a great matchup. You have no idea what's going on with Boogie. Maybe people play Davis, I'm not sure. But yeah, Harden seems like easily the chalk big money play. And since you can spend up, given all the other cheap value, it's really hard to imagine him not being up at that 70%+ range again.
Now, I think you see big minutes out of Harden as long as the game stays close. You likely see big minutes out of Ariza if the game stays close. They don't play.
Yeah,
I think Nene is out tonight, I think, and that would actually probably open up some minutes for Capella if that was the case. He could be an interesting sort of center play if he's coming on the cheap. I looked at the Pelicans last night in writing some of the picks, and one other thing I found interesting was Anthony Davis's usage has actually gone up since the Boogie trade, and his rebounding has gone up too. Basically, I'm pretty sure I got the date right when I did the query, but his usage went up a couple, like maybe 2 points, and the rebounding was up like something like 1.5%. It doesn't seem like he's really changed much. It's Boogie that seems to have taken the hit. Like the minutes are way down for him. You know, he's playing somewhere like 30 minutes a game because they've realized, I think, it's very difficult to play these two guys together. And if the choice, Gentry has said, if I need to choose between one of them, I'm going to play Davis. Do you think, but that being said, Boogie's coming very cheap now. He's like 9,000 on $9,000 on FanDuel, somewhere around the same price on DraftKings. It's going to be really hard. Do you think it's going to be really hard to kind of get away from those prices, just considering this is the Marcus Cousins we're still talking about?
No, we've done it before. You know, his price has actually gone up from his last game against Miami. I mean, rightfully, this is a better matchup. But yeah, if he's going to play 30 minutes, it's awfully tough to be a $9,400 player on 30 yep. minutes a game. And we've seen with Boogie on this new team here, he's had difficulty being a $9,400 player on 40 minutes. So I'm just not sure. Like, I don't feel any need to jam him in tonight, especially because I think we just don't know what the plan is in terms of his minutes. There have been some reasons or excuses, I guess, around why he hasn't played minutes in the last few games. We've also seen Gentry occasionally will just sit him for no reason because, like, yep. whatever the matchup is, quote-unquote, not good or something. Like, that was not a thing that happened in Sacramento ever. Like, he would play his minutes even when they were winning by 30 points. So this is a new normal for Biggie Boogie that we're trying to get used to. And yeah, maybe it was just foul trouble last game, but maybe it wasn't. So the right number on the minutes, I'd say probably still like 34, 35. Maybe he's still worth it for cash game purposes, but I don't know that you're necessarily going to be in line with the chalk if you go that way.
No, the foul trouble was a concern there, and he has had some foul trouble, but Gentry's just come out and said, like, I didn't put him back in the game.
He gets foul trouble too. He's had 5 fouls in 3 yeah. of his last 4 games.
And Gentry said, I didn't put him back in that 25-minute game against Charlotte. I just didn't put him back in because we were playing well, and I just didn't need to. So that was pretty telling that where they view him. If they're going to choose between those two guys, they're going to choose Davis for the minutes, I think. Those are really the only two. Davis, I think you can really still consider on DraftKings as well. His price is still very much in the value zone. I wouldn't even mind playing kind of both of them, sort of hoping that you get hoping you get the upside from at least one of them, and I think decent floors from both. But like, Boogie is no longer a safe commodity. I was probably overly bullish in my write-up on him, where I said I think I was just probably a little overly bullish in the write-up in general. Phoenix and Orlando at 10 o'clock. Big news here, obviously, Eric Bledsoe out for the season. Looks like Brandon Knight might also be out for the season. That leaves us Tyler Ulis and Devin Booker. Do you see those two guys as just basically now the two guys that are just going to play major backcourt minutes for the Suns, and will they be – well, Ulis, would you agree that Ulis is probably one of the most popular like chalk plays on the entire slate tonight?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, played a ton of minutes last game, was good, was heavily played. Really hard to imagine. I mean, he's only 5,400. And before the podcast, you and I were talking, and you pointed out that, you know, years ago that, or maybe this was during the podcast, years ago, Ulis would never have been 5,400 by this point.
Right.
But here we are, and he is. And the fact of the matter is he's still a good play, probably. So, yeah, Ulis will be super, super heavily owned. The rest of the Suns team gets a little more interesting for me because, you know, like Devin Booker's been a guy who's had big usage in the past when Bledsoe's been out, but he's kind of been up and down. I'm a little concerned about his confidence. And the Suns in general are just so messy that it's hard to say. And Booker not exactly cheap anymore either. He's up to 6,900. But I think Ulis for sure and Booker is a great option for his price, but I wouldn't like build a lineup around him necessarily.
I do think that Alan Williams is still a deal. I know he comes off the bench, and that is always a little bit risky when you're playing a bench guy because it happens a lot where the bench guys are the ones whose minutes goes first. But the guy still is playing a ton. He's producing at a super high level. Center is not exactly deep tonight. And 5,800 on FanDuel, I'm willing to take the risk that he's such a per minute beast that if he hits 30 minutes, I think that you're pretty easily fine at 5,800. Even at 25 minutes, you can probably live with it. Do you think he's one of the more popular center plays tonight?
Yeah, probably. I'm not even sure he's my favorite center play in this game, though. Like, I really like Vucevic still. He didn't play as many minutes against Golden State, but he was phenomenal in two prior matchups against Sacramento and Cleveland. And if he goes out there and plays like 32 minutes, which I would suspect is about what we can expect in a relatively close game for them, because keeping in mind that Orlando also just gets blown out all the time, so their minutes kind of get erratic from time to time. But yeah, I'd be happy with either of them, but I might be even more happy if I had Vuce on my team.
Oh, really? I don't think it's close. I'd much rather have Williams at the price. I mean, for like $2,000 less on FanDuel, that's actually really not all that close for me. I would much rather have Williams than
no need to be all smug about it, dude.
I'm not being smug. I'm just open. I just want people to say that we always agree with each other. I don't agree with you on this one. We sometimes get called out for time to time.
It's not even close for me. That we're just all I'm so smart. Yeah.
We're always agreeing on the podcast. We don't agree on that. I do not think, I think that is a really, really bad play by you, and you'll pay for it. Rest of the Orlando side, you know, the Suns are a good matchup. This is, they have a pretty high total here. Peyton, Fournier, guys like this, interest you at all?
I'm still mad about the Vucevic and Williams thing.
We made a bad point, and you got called on it. Figure out how you're going to move on from it.
What did you ask me about? Peyton and
Fournier? Fournier and Peyton and guys like that.
Yeah, Peyton to me, I mean, he's obviously flexed incredible upside somewhat recently, but he's also shown some pretty erratic behavior as well. Great matchup with the Suns. It stands to reason the matchup only gets better with no Bledsoe. So I think he's definitely in play. Fournier is kind of one of these guys where he'll show up in lineups from time to time. It never feels even the remotest bit exciting when you see his name in there. And right. If you're like me, you kind of like go and do the quick sanity check on the game log. You're like, can I just see a 5X points per dollar in this? No? Okay. Hey, well, there was that game in February, you know, so.
Right.
I wouldn't hate to have him in the lineups, and I get the case for it, but he's just not a fun guy to root for. He just doesn't do anything. Like, he's like the guy on your pickup basketball team that just stands there outside the three-point line, just calling for the ball constantly, but, like, doesn't rebound, doesn't play defense. When he gets the ball, you know, the possession's over. Like, I'm just not a big Fournier fan of his game in general, and I think that makes me not like him for DFS, even though that's not reasonable.
And the minutes just don't seem to have a really high ceiling at this point. That's just kind of been the way with the Magic in the short term. Final game on the slate is Milwaukee and LA. You know, obviously we know that the Lakers are great DFS matchups when for the other team going that direction. What are your thoughts on guys like Giannis and Middleton specifically tonight? Those seem to be that's where a majority of their offense is coming. But I'm interested to hear what you think about Giannis. Giannis has been incredibly just erratic with his fantasy performances, or basically since Jabari Parker went down. Do you think he's a safer commodity here against the Lakers, or is just kind of like we're getting a real taste of the new sort of Giannis with Middleton around, and it's just not the same sort of fantasy upside that we saw earlier in the season?
Well, this will really be the test. I mean, because if you can't play Giannis against the Lakers, then you just can't play him against anybody. So if asked the question, can you play Giannis against anybody? I would say probably yes. I think I would just feel fine playing Giannis tonight. But when you're choosing between him and Harden, I think I would lean Harden. And since you probably can't play both, just from a price perspective, then, you know, maybe you just don't wind up playing him in any of your cash game lineups. But I do think that with all the savings going around tonight, there is a chance you can play both, and it's not something I would be discouraged about. I don't think he's quite the same guy with Middleton around, but he and Middleton don't really do the same things necessarily, even though they kind of nominally play the same position. Giannis is much more of a creator, much better rebounder, much better passer. So I just think... yeah, it's still in play for me, even if it's not as easy as it would have been 2 months ago.
No, I agree there. And it's very weird because you're getting his prices come down. And in the past, this would have been sort of just, you know, lock him up sort of territory against the Lakers team. But I don't know. Yeah, I'm on the part where it's just a little too erratic for him. I think Middleton's a very strong play, though. He's still might be on a little bit of an implied minutes cap, which is the only thing that worries me about him. And the Lakers side, speaking of minutes, man, is this team all over the place. Like it's 30 minutes or less for just about every guy except for Brandon Ingram. Ingram's the one guy that they're fine running out there a ton. He's been playing like 35 to even
39 minutes. Yeah.
39 minutes. He's still only 4,400 on field. He's actually been scoring more too. Do you see him as like a, not a chalk play, but as something you can stomach from the Lakers at 4,400 if he's going to be the one guy that Luke Walton says like, everyone else is all over the place, but you are actually going to play these minutes.
No, he'll be heavily owned tonight, no question about it. And I think the other guy you missed there was just Jordan Clarkson. You know, he's been playing a minimum of 33 minutes in his last five games. Now that he's named a starter, played 39 minutes against Houston. For whatever reason, they just want to play him more than D'Angelo Russell. So, more power to him, I guess. Clarkson, not exactly cheap right now, but I think there's plenty of upside built into his $5,600 price tag. So, I could see both of those being very viable cash game options.
I think you see people talk themselves into Julius Randle only because he was so good last game, but I would caution that by saying that he was as good as you could probably ever be on 29 minutes, and I just don't think they're going to play him 34 to 35 minutes, really. So I do think you see people maybe trend in that direction because power forward in particular is very difficult, and I don't think he's a bad play. But
don't you think he's going to play that many minutes? He was playing 32 to 35 minutes for four games in a row prior to the Denver game.
Yeah, but then you just go out and play 23 and 29, and it's the Lakers, and I just don't think that they're
The Denver game
again.
was a blowout. I don't know. I think I could absolutely see him playing a bunch of minutes tonight.
Well, I have him at 30 minutes. Do you think that's too low?
Yeah, probably. I think the more realistic number is like 32, 33.
Yeah, makes me nervous. That's something we'll look at over the course of the day. I just get really maybe a little snake bit on where the Lakers are with the minutes, and maybe that's more like a D'Angelo Russell thing because he just went from starting to sitting, or then he played two guard. I don't know. They're a mess. Anyway,
Maybe you
we're from
should
Daily.
maybe see a therapist for anxiety issues or something if
Maybe you should marry Julius Randle. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Here to help you get started, keep winning on FanDuel and/or DraftKings NBA. Head over to the site now, grab a free 3-day trial to the projection system. That's going to give you optimal lineups powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab. Free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after. Includes NHL projections, baseball projections just a few weeks away. Think you'll be happy with the service, about as good a deal as you'll find in the industry. Buddy, we'll talk to you again on Monday when we. Oh no, I'll do Monday's podcast on my own. I'll talk to you again Tuesday for basketball.
Yeah, love you, Julius.
All right, let's talk to Chris Durrell and break down some NASCAR coming for this Sunday. I am here with Chris Durrell, DFSR's resident hockey expert, PGA expert, and NASCAR expert. And he happens to be the expert in all the realms of the sports that I probably wish I followed a little bit more, but just don't. So Chris has been one of our goldmine finds in the niche guy. Hey, there's a big place in society for the niche guy, man. You can make as you have made a whole career off of being a niche guy. He's here to talk about this upcoming week's race, the Camping World 500, and what are some things that we can take a look at if we're trying to set NASCAR lineups. And if you're like me, you haven't set a ton of NASCAR lineups, but maybe you're sitting around Sunday, you like a little sweat, and maybe this is a sport you want to get into. He's going to run down some of the stuff that things that you want to kind of keep track of or have in mind going into a NASCAR race. What's the first thing that you look at? The pricing comes out. You look at, you see it's the Camping World 500. What's like, where does your brain, or from a statistical standpoint, where do you go first when you're taking a look at NASCAR?
Yeah, it's actually before prices even come out. I have my sheet built without the DraftKings pricing or odds or anything like that, and I enter like the last 2 years track history, career track history, and then a big one is looking at the track type, because you got short tracks, you got super speedways, you've got the 1 mile intermediates, and then the main one would be like your 1.5 mile track. So put that information in there as well. Kind of look at the last 2 years, kind of short term, I guess, would be best. And then current form. We've only got three races so far this year, so current form's a little bit down. But once I plug those numbers in, I really look at like the last 2 years and who's been good here, who's led laps. This week, of course, again, I think it happens to be Kevin Harvick. But that's kind of what I look at pre-price, and I can kind of guess with the price. It's a little bit easier with NASCAR because there is only 39, 40 drivers every week to kind of guess where their prices are going to be. But then I also have another sheet, the race-by-race trends. So when the prices do come out, I start looking at guys that have taken, their salaries gone up, gone down, try and find some value there, as well as looking at last week's ownership percentage, GPP ownership percentage, cash game ownership percentage, and just kind of see where the trends are that way.
Well, I think everyone knows, I don't need to tell anyone that this is the Phoenix International Raceway is a 1 mile tri-oval intermediate track. I mean, I'm sure I'm reading. Chris sent me notes ahead of time, so it can sound like I knew what I was talking. So I can sound like I knew what I was like talking about a little bit. So I just read that verbatim off of what he wrote. But when you have this tri-oval track, so this strikes me as you sent a note. You said about Kevin Harvick. He's won six of the last nine races. We were talking about this with PGA a little bit, and how you can't always go one-to-one corollary between like a course history, just because the guys, you simply just don't play somewhere enough, right? Like you just like over the course of your career, you're just not going to play a certain course. All this, six out of the nine last races to have, you're saying he's won at this track. Like, does that strike you, that gets to me, it starts kind of screaming at me like this is a real thing. Yeah. Like this is like, now is it, do you think it's more associated with him just being one of the very best drivers in NASCAR, and the very best drivers are just going to win more races than others? Or is there something about this track that you think he has, like, suits his skill set, let's say?
Yeah, it's a flat track as well. So there's 9 to 11 degrees of banking, whereas, say, like Vegas, you're in that 20 to 24 degrees of banking. So the cars are a lot looser, especially now with the new downforce package. And he is a top-tier driver. He always has been good at the intermediate tracks, 1 mile, 1.5 mile tracks. Him and Jimmy Johnson have been looking at the track history from that track type. are right up there. But when it comes to Phoenix itself, yeah, it's a rare feat. Not many times you see a driver in the top series in NASCAR win that many races in such a short amount of time. I believe there was an instance where he had 5 straight wins. So it's pretty amazing what he's done here at this track. So he's definitely going to be, just like last week, most likely is going to be in that 40 to 45% GPP ownership range again, even though his price went up.
So when you're looking to build those lineups, let's say you're looking to, I know you play GPP more than cash, but you're looking to play cash games. Is he just going to be considered like a chalk cash game play here just because of, you know, his set and just what he's done here in the past? Like, you know, you say 40 to 50% in GPPs. Do you see like much, much higher even for cash games?
Probably 60 to 70%, maybe sure. Even higher depending on what cash games. Some of the cash games aren't as big as other sports just because there's not, it's a fairly niche sport, so there's not as many people playing, of course. So yeah, probably in that 70% range, but I guess last week proved it. He was that high owned. He also crashed lap 68, blew a tire, went into the wall, got, I think, minus 12 DraftKings points. So there is merit, I think, in GPPs to fading him, and that's why I like doing multiple lineups, because I'll make some lineups with him, some without him, kind of hedge a bit that way. But I just don't think you can, if you're building one lineup, I don't think you can really get around him, especially in cash games. Just, he's dominated the laps led here, so he's going to get those dominator points. And if he qualifies back in the field, then he's got some place differential bonus point value as well.
It's really interesting talking about like just the variance that's built in for every sport. You know, like around the NBA, the variance is sometimes built in around the minutes or the blowout. In football, variance is almost always built in around injuries, right? It's very easy to get injured. The fact that the variance, you know, PGA, you don't make the cut, and now you're really sunk. But the fact that a car crash is where that's built in a lot for NASCAR is interesting, especially you know your guy Rex. That's just kind of the end of him. Yeah, what are some other kind of maybe strategies you're taking specifically here with the Camping World 500? Other drivers, racers? Do you call them drivers or racers? I should know this. Drivers, other drivers that you're maybe taking a look at after Harvick, seems like you think he's going to be the chalk, but maybe some lesser known guys that I can pop in there, or even some big names that you think also stand to finish pretty well.
I think Joey Logano, he's next in salary. He's had some pretty good success here as well, right behind Harvick. And their cars have been going really good, the Penske cars this year, him and Brad Keselowski. So both of those guys, I think, even pairing them together, they've been running so well. The Ford camp's been really fast this year, so Kevin Harvick's there too. And as you see, the three top, Kevin Harvick, Logano, and Keselowski, are all in Fords. So they're kind of trending that way. A little less owned guy might be Chase Elliott. He's popular in groups, but his price is getting up there, close to that 10 grand. So he's like fifth in salary now. Ahead of Martin Truex Jr. even, who should be popular this week again, coming off a win. So the young guys, I think, also make a good play. Elliott, Kyle Larson at 9,100, even down to Ryan Blaney at 8,000. Both Blaney and Elliott last year in their rookie season finished top 10 at both times at this track. So they race here in March, and then there's a in the chase in the fall as well. So they finished top 10 in both of those. So I think they're both going to be strong plays this week. And then it really comes down to qualifying and practice. I really look at final practice speeds, and qualifying is two most important things. And that starts, and I believe, about 2 hours from now, the first practice. And the first practice, I don't really pay attention to as much, just because they're working on qualifying runs. So it's not really how they're going to be running on the track. That's where that final practice comes in. That's when most teams are going to be running they call it race trim. So they're going to be working on their 10, 20, 30 lap averages.
Yeah, just like in any other sport, it seems like NASCAR just favors those who pay the most attention to these things, like knowing where a car is going to start, knowing, you know, how they ran their practice around. So, you know, I think you've mentioned before that, you know, where you qualified in your practice seating, it does seem it has a high correlation to where you finish, correct? I mean, you need to know these things going in. You need to know which cars are running first or as compared to last when the race starts, correct?
Yeah, like for DraftKings points especially, I mean, you can have a really fast car, a guy that you really like early in the week, say like a Casey Kane or something, you love his price at 8,100. Practice speeds, he's maybe around top 10, but if he qualifies, has a really good qualifying run and starts second or third, there's really no place differential upside. And I don't really like guys that start inside the top 10 if they're not like an elite driver and are really showing speed throughout the whole weekend at practice, that they're going to be a top 10, top 5 car. If they're looking like a top 10 car and they're qualified inside, you know, even the top 5 or inside the top 10, I'm probably going to fade them for the most part just because of that negative place differential. You can get negative points, and that can really hurt your lineups.
Because the player, or I guess the driver pool is so small, you said it was like 39, 40 drivers, yeah, somewhere in that range. Do you need to be, like when you're making lineups, do you need to sort of make sure, like do you always need to fill your entire salary cap, just considering that there's just not that many options, right? Like how much at times can you just say to yourself, okay, I don't need to fill, you know, X dollars to make this lineup. If I'm going to get a little separation, maybe I'm the guy that was not afraid to just like leave some money on the table.
Definitely with NASCAR with only 40, lowering your floor of your salary is an awesome strategy to try and separate yourself. At times I've left $1,500 on the table. So it really comes down to if those guys are starting at a good position, they're showing some speed, but you know, they're all in the 8,000, 7,000, even a couple 6,000 guys. That's a great lineup to build around, just because all those place differential, they all add up times six. If you get a couple guys, or say even five or six guys that are between 5 and 10 positive place differential points, that all adds up.
Well, it's crazy too, because like if a car crashes, if you have a two car crash, it eliminates right there 5% of the field, yeah, roughly. So which seems like an insane amount. That just does seem like an insane amount. If you're leaving money on the table, you can probably stomach it, knowing that one crash could eliminate, you know, a not insignificant part of the field in general. So yeah, some interesting things to think about. Any other final one or two drivers that you haven't mentioned yet that people, if they're just throwing a lineup together, they can maybe stick in there and kind of, you know, sweat a certain car out?
Another guy I'll be paying attention to down in that low range, 7,500, is Eric Jones in the 77. He's teammates, new team with the 78, Martin Truex, who won last week. They are a Toyota, and they kind of run under the Joe Gibbs racing team as well. So they've actually been fast on the Joe Gibbs cars, and Eric Jones is a rookie, so he could be a little bit lower owned, probably around, I don't know, 8-10% at 7,500. So he'll be the one to watch through qualifying. If he starts outside the top 10 and even the top 20 and shows some speed, he'll be one I'll be on for sure.
Great stuff, man. Camping World 500 coming up this weekend. Get your DraftKings lineups in now. Chris is working hard. He writes an opening article. I think he updates that after qualifying as well. So you're getting up-to-date information. He's also put together a bunch of information that he's able to share. Just kind of take a look for people to compare drivers. Doing great work for us, Chris. Thanks so much. Good luck with your racing this weekend.
Have a good weekend.
All right, brother.